Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. Okay, we are in paper 55, section 4. We got into that section a little ways. It's on old single column, page 627. And we're ready to do, you know, sort of subsection number 2 there, the second stage of light and life. Okay, so let's just try to get ourselves a little bit back in place. You have this very vanilla-sounding section title of Administrative Readjustments, but they're going through the seven stages of light and life, one at a time, giving us what they can, little snippets on the basic way that the planet is being administered, you know, who's in charge exactly, what sort of the spirit of that age is. And as we mentioned last time, you get a little bit in the first stages, because they have some elements that we can relate to there. It starts to get pretty sparse as you go into the latter stages or later stages of light and life. But you know, they definitely want to explain to us, okay, what's happening with the Adam and Eve, what's happening with the planetary sovereign, you know, some of those basic things that we can understand, the key role of the finaliters. When you think back to what we covered in that first stage of light and life, a little thumbnail sketch that they gave us, you know, recall that one of the key things that they were explaining in there was exactly what becomes of the midwares. Every planet has these midwares, and finally, under normal circumstances, when you get to the first stage of light and life, they bring that, you know, heretofore hidden midware culture out into open relationship with the human culture. And initially, those midwares are taking a very definitive role in helping to bridge the gap between the human culture and the growingly advanced, sophisticated planetary administration that's starting to happen. And they sort of gave us a quick little sense of how that crescendos. Remember how it ended there with reminding you that you literally have absonite ministers coming from paradise by the time you get to the seventh stage of light and life. So that should, you know, nothing else, that should remind you of just how advanced things are, even in the beginning stage, that it would be culminating in having absonite ministers. So,
you think an absentite visitor would be visible to these people?
No, you know, the absentite visitor would definitely not be visible. I mean, not even the finaliters are visible. And we were wondering, you know, exactly what's the logistics of that? I mean, they must have all kinds of unrevealed beings that somehow serve as, you know, intermediaries to somehow transfer what these absentite ministers have to offer that world, you know, to those that they're trying to offer it to. They can't do it directly in any way. Not even the finaliters can do it directly.
So maybe even the planetary prince wouldn't recognize an
absentite. No, I mean, no, the planetary prince can't see absentite beings or anything like that. So, right, you know, so you're talking about, a very high phenomenon, somehow needing a, you know, lots of bridging, downstepping.
Yeah.
We really don't know exactly what we're talking about there, but you know, but they're just giving us that little hint.
Adjuster?
Well, the adjuster, of course, is, you know, has a relationship to anything high and low. You know,
okay.
Right? I mean, the highest part of the adjuster can relate to the infinite level.
All right. Right? I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, me. We might have covered this last week. Quick question. Has science at this juncture advanced to the point that we can visualize the Morontia, or have the Morontia beings just sort of tuned up?
Now, remember, that was what we finally got last time, where they, if you look, that paragraph that, you know, in that subsection on the first stage of light and life, you got the ABC in there, right. Then you got that big paragraph, and the latter part of that, you know, they talk about such changes have already been made in the range of human vision to enable mortals to recognize these heretofore invisible cousins of the early Adamic regime. And it's okay that you brought that up, because I actually want to remind you about the rest of that in just a little bit. So let me read that rest of that paragraph. It says, "This is made possible by the final discoveries of physical science in liaison with the enlarged planetary functions of the master physical controllers." You'll see how that fits in here in a little bit. So that was kind of they've got the planetary sovereign with a Trinity teacher son helping them. Remember, you got the finaliters, and then Adam and Eve are serving as the interface between the two, since one is, you know, directed to the father's side and the other is directed to the mother's side, so they can match up with those other two leaders. So that's what we have in the first stage. Now, what really gets going in the second stage? Let's just jump in and get into it here.
2, the second stage of light and life. This epoch is signalized on the worlds by the arrival of a life carrier, who becomes the volunteer advisor of the planetary rulers regarding the further efforts to purify and stabilize the mortal race. Thus do the life carriers actively participate in the further evolution of the human race, physically, socially, and economically. And then they extend their supervision to the further purification of the mortal stock by the drastic elimination of the retarded and persisting remnants of inferior potential of an intellectual, philosophic, cosmic, and spiritual nature. Those who design the planet life, the plant life.
No, design and plant.
Oh, those who design and plant life on an inhabited world are fully competent to advise the material sons and daughters who have full and unquestioned authority to purge the evolving race of all detrimental influences.
Okay, see, so you can definitely see that the Adam and Eve are, are very much still in a very active role. You're seeing them, being the spear point to put the finishing touches on the whole biologic integrity issue. You've had all of this time from when they first came until now that's been worked on. Science has gone forward, all this time, all those hundreds of thousands of years or whatever it is, up to this point in the second stage of light and life. And yet still, even with all of that genetic engineering, all of the biologic uplift, all of that, you still have issues. Okay? Right, so there's, we talked about this some before, just to appreciate, as soon as you take care of the lower issues, there's new issues that are predicated on that now stable foundation that couldn't manifest before, but now they're manifesting. So you take care of them. Well, then there's new issues on top of that, yet higher foundation, and it just keeps going up and up and up until you finally are getting to, the cherry on top, if you will, of this whole biologic Sunday that they've been constructing. Okay. Let's just look at some of those issues specifically. Now, the arrival of a life carrier. Now, one would think that if you had the original life carriers that got permission to stay on, you probably wouldn't have an arrival right then. But one of those life carriers would be taking the lead at this point, and you know, in this final effort. But if they all left, then one would come back. You know, so between the Adam and Eve that know all the genetic issues in great detail and the life carriers that were behind it all, you're going to work on these final details. And so there's two blocks to it. The first part is, just like I was saying, they're working bottom up. Even at this, you know, high end, that final, final, those final issues at the very top, there's a bottom part and a top part to that, those final issues. And so first of all, you've got just the basic physically, as you see there, right? Thus do the life carriers actively participate in the further evolution of the human race. You know, and this is obviously a very managed evolution. You almost want to put evolution in quotes there, right, when it's at this point. But they're saying that evolution so that you you don't forget that even when they're very aggressively you know, engaging things, micromanaging things, it's all in a recognition that it's an evolutionary system, has to conform to the supreme. Okay, it's nothing just, you know, who cares about the supreme? We're just going to do it this way because we want to do it this way.
There's,
you know, they're never doing anything, you know, in rebellion, right? They're always doing it, you know, in recognition of the supreme has the final say on the whole evolutionary thing, not all of the little hands that are facilitating. But so in that context, they work on really getting the final, you know, by and large, the final physical things taken care of. And then the immediate things that are predicated on that physical foundation, socially and economically.
And you wouldn't think economically.
Right? Well, there's all of the things that you can immediately think of with socially and economically where, you know, because those are very much predicated on the material foundation of things, right? I mean, the Adam and Eve in general, remember, are working on all of those. You know, when they start doing their ministry, they're not just fostering science. You know, they're working on economic issues, industrial issues, all of the material related issues, you know, are in the material son and daughter's hands. But one of the things that if you remember what they say up in the civilization papers, that they are reminding of you here between the lines when they say economically, is the problems with genetics is the primary reason for poverty. Poverty is fundamentally caused by genetic limitations. That's one of the things that, I mean, if you're wondering where I'm getting that, I can even point it out here. I marked it just in case. In paper 71, section 3, you know, they remind you that, but poverty and dependence can never be eliminated if the defective and degenerate stocks are freely supported and permitted to reproduce without restraint.
Don says that's impressive for him.
Right, well, you can be reminded of that for everything. I mean, you know, I mean, all of us, if we have any sort of financial issues, yeah, right. Fundamentally, it's a genetic issue.
Has nothing to do with the stock market.
But anyway, I mean, just the very fact that you can get caught up in things outside of yourself like that, you know, I mean, all of that is genetic issues. The fact that we would have a system, you know, that could, you know, very unexpectedly assail you, you know. I mean, that's part of the whole genetic limitation of the whole system. Anyway, so
that's how they affect it genetically.
Right. See, so that's the whole point. I'm, you know, that's the fundamental thing that they're doing here, not some sort of bringing an intellectual thing down to improve the economics system, but there's a limit to how much you can improve an economic system predicated on a limited genetics.
On the people who are improving it, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, so no, they have to be evolved enough to be able to...
Right. They have to have the capacity to function, you know, in a more enlightened economic mode.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, there's no magic. You have to actually have the capacity, which is predicated on biologic foundation. Right, see, so that's what's going on there. So first you do those things that are very fundamentally at the lowest, you know, the lowest parts of the cultural structure that are very much predicated on the biologic issue directly. And then they say, you know, literally, and then they extend their supervision to the further purification of the mortal stock. Okay, and you notice now it's, you know, because you aren't so so immediately dealing with the biology, they speak more definitively. The drastic elimination, you know, is the way they word it. And notice what they're going after there. Intellectual, philosophic, cosmic, and spiritual nature. So, you know, and that one you want to think kind of more top down, right? Your personality is spirit pattern. So when they say spiritual nature, I mean, if you can't imagine anything else, at least think of it in that terms. If I'm going to improve all this stuff, I have to be able to get my personality more definitively involved, engaged to my mindful self. You know, spirit pattern has to have spirit nature to identify to, right? So that's kind of step one. If you have personality more definitively able to engage the phenomenon, then you can bring more of the cosmic down, yeah, more of the cosmos down, and hence their comment about cosmic there, improving the cosmic nature. The only way to synchronize with the cosmos is with your personal nature. Right? So that greater personal nature allows a greater synchronization with the cosmos. So you can bring that cosmos, that universal harmony, more down into your mind and establish that personal living philosophy. And you see the philosophic there, right? That within you reflection of the cosmos above. So that's philosophic. And then you bring that down and out into practice. You know, that's the intellectual, well, through your adjutant mind. Okay, see, so that one, you can think very much, you're working on being able, you worked on getting the full top, bottom up that you can out of the mortals on this world, and then you work on getting the most top down that you can for the mortals on this world. Now you've got the full package, the full bottom up and the top down, and you've completed what you can do with mortals on that world.
What's drastic?
Again, for us, you know, drastic, you know, invokes some sort of a Nazi picture or something, right? Okay, I mean, obviously, it's not, you know, something crude like that. But what they're pointing out is that you like I said, you don't have to be so, well, let's just do this little tweak and kind of let it work in the evolutionary process. Okay, you can kind of just go in there with scissors, you know, quote unquote, right? Okay, you just by much more by fiat, like you were saying. We're just going to do this, boom.
Surgical.
Right?
But it's genetics anyway.
Right, it's all genetics. You're modifying the genetic nature, but you know, there's all kinds, it's not just merely the chromosomes. I mean, the whole physiology, I mean all the chemistry of the body, you know. Remember how gland chemistry relates to how much, you know, spirit can identify with a human. All those physiological issues are all going to be tweaked. Like I said, when all is said and done, everything about you is an artificial phenomenon. It's mind-made and personality-managed. Every little bit of it, you know, has been tweaked to be exactly as it should be. Right? The evolutionary process is just a it's like doing the rough framework of a house, the evolutionary process, right? And then the finishing carpenters come in, right? You know, and take care of all the details in a much more direct way. And like they're pointing out, these very last things, you know, you don't have to sort of do gentle tweaks and wait. You know, I mean, you just do it. It's like this. This should is the way it should be. Boom. You just make it that way. Okay, now it's done. All right. So no longer are you going to have any ability for those for there to be, you know, sort of recessive tails that are not appropriate to be popping out. I mean, yeah, you're just going to pin nail it down. Okay, and it's just not going to squirt out anymore. It's going to be a rock solid genetics that never tails off on tangents anymore. Okay, that's the drasticness. It's you're just stopping any further,
loose ends.
Yeah, maybe that's a good way to express it. Yeah.
So would you imagine that the life carriers are educating the people on the planet to do this themselves, or do you think that they're actually doing it?
Humans are going to be very, very involved in all of this. Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, humans have the full science and everything, you know. So they're just being directed in all this. Right. I mean, for one thing, the life carrier, you know, can't do anything. Remember, he's in a mode where he can't engage it literally anyway. You know, he couldn't pick up a microscope if he had to. Right. You know, he's in a mode where, you know, he can't engage material directly. I mean, Adam and Eve and, you know, and other violet race, obviously, could. But, I mean, all the humans are fully up to speed and they can do all this, yeah. You know, in many ways, remember, the Adam and Eve got them into that mode way before the magisterial sun. You know, they had a pretty advanced science clear back then, let alone way up here in the second stage of light and life. Okay.
Oh, I see. It says it right next sentence. I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like they go as far as they possibly can with philosophy, but because it's a material issue, in the end they use science to deal with those details. So that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in the literal sense, I mean, you can just think about it literally. I mean, ultimately, you're going for a greater and greater philosophic people, you know. And in the overarching sense of how philosophy is tied to science and religion, right? I mean, you know, it's tied to matter and spirit,
yeah.
Right? You know, and here, you know, you're being reminded. I mean, there's a limit to how profound a personal living philosophy I can ever produce, because I have a very limited genetic foundation. Right? The individuality side of that individuality, unity, association is wanting. I mean, yes, by grace, the unity side, you know, could be whatever. I mean, I've got an adjuster even, right? There's no limits on that. But the individuality side is severely limited by my, you know, crude biologic nature right now, so there's just a limit to how much the upper domain of the hourglass of my mind can reflect the cosmos.
No matter what.
No matter what. Yeah. No matter how much I have revelations or what have you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's see here. The one little thing. Notice that how they end that. They tell you the material sons and daughters who have full and unquestioned authority to purge. And we're again reminding how drastic things are getting, you know, in an evolutionary sense. But full and unquestioned authority. Right? So you've reached this this point where. You know what the authority that the Adam and Eve have to work on the biologic uplift issues. There's not even really any definitive evolutionary constraints in play at this very end. I mean, they can just finally just do it. You know, it's like the master physical controller saying, you know, if we didn't have to synchronize things to an evolutionary process, you could get a world that, you know, the geologic evolution of world in place in a lot sooner. That, you know, in a lot quicker fashion, and biologic evolution too, right? But everything's got to fit into the supreme. But you know, it's still very much there's you'll see that they mention this several times as we go forward. These high beings that are coming to advise, don't impose their higher recognition on things. Everyone is expected to pull themselves up by the bootstraps as much as you possibly can before anyone is going to hand you something from the top down. You know, that's why we don't have celestial beings helping us with all our problems right now. You know, because, you know, that's just telling you, you don't need fundamentally don't need help yet. You can do this yourself. You know, it may take you 100,000 years, but you can do this yourself still. So we can't help you. That's, you know, so humans' desires for celestials to come and fix all of our problems, that's just not how it works, right? I mean,
but you can't pray for guidance.
Right, sure, you can pray for guidance, all this sort of stuff, but don't pray for the, you know, some right. fiat being to come and fix your problems, because that's not the way things work, right? It's not going to work that way.
At this particular juncture, I'm sure they're not going to be, the world is not going to be swarming with the billions of people that we have now.
Right, you've got a much smaller population. Population is fully regulated and all those sorts of things. Yes, yeah. Okay, but anyway, you know, just notice that it's not like the finaliters are directing this. No, it's the material son and daughter, right? With their limited perspectives, are still the ones that are ultimately in charge, right? And you do as much bottom up as possible. Yeah, I mean, you know, just one more comment. I mean, just like with this book that's in my lap. I mean, until we had gone as far as we could with evolutionary philosophy, getting up to the beginning of the 20th century, they can't give us this, right? Because that would be getting ahead of it. You know, they can only give you a philosophic uplift when you've done as much bootstrapping as you can. And only then do you then get something. Okay.
Oh, the kind of the genetic milieu that our Adam and Eve, you know, had to encounter when they got here.
Right.
Did that kind of contribute to their, you know, discouragement or?
Oh yeah, very much. Right. Yeah. I mean, that would be, you know, our Adam and Eve's fundamental discouragement is, you know, immediately related to their first and foremost mission of biologic uplift.
Yeah.
They're looking at the biologic mess, you know, and they're going, what on earth am I supposed to do with this? You know, but they were given guidance. They just needed to think more long-term than they're used to thinking.
Yeah.
It would all work out. It's just going to take a lot longer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they didn't last 24 hours, and they started, you know, just giving up. Right, it's the complexity of it that was just, you know, mind-numbing to them.
Yeah.
You know, the seeming intractableness of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, they could see the full spectrum of the contrast, what they saw when they got here versus the end point, sort of.
I mean, obviously, you know, they're also thinking, well, you know, it'd be really great if we had a planetary prince, and so we had that definitive authority, you know, figure and all that sort of stuff, you know. But the most immediate thing that they're wrestling with is is just how complicated this was going to be to properly uplift this system.
Yeah.
They were going to have to take really long-term view, you know. Yeah, boy, we don't even want to think about blending that with that until way, way down the road, that sort of stuff. Right?
Yeah.
Yep. Two questions. Winston's asking, can the extended limits of my mind override my biology or genetics?
Jesus, you know, Jesus the man demonstrated you can get all the way to fusion even with our limited genetics. Okay, so, I mean, that Jesus that fused is primitive compared to the people we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about humans that are way more advanced than Jesus was, you know, there in Palestine fusing with his thought adjuster. Right? So, I mean, it's apples and oranges. Right? I mean, you know, not to mention not only the individuals, you know, I mean, we can... they can tell us the story of Jesus and we can relate to that story. Right? We understand what's going on there. You know, we might be impressed by how well he handled a certain situation or something, but we're talking about beings where they can't even explain to us how they're functioning and stuff. It's completely beyond our imagination how profound these beings are. You know, let alone, so that's just an individual, let alone how they're functioning as a society. The super additive consequence of the relationship between beings that are so profound we can't imagine.
Right.
You know, what's that society like? Yeah. Completely beyond anything we can imagine.
But
right?
Much of the society haven't reached third circle level.
Right, but again, so that reminds you of the relativity of all this, right? See?
Yeah, it's the level of the supreme.
Second stage.
Yeah, Enoch views this as a jester too, right? You know, okay, so again, you've got to separate this individual fusion issue with, the evolution of a society and the people that are commensurate with that society. It's just, right? This is so, like I said, I mean, Jesus would not be allowed on these worlds. He would be a disease.
And yet they say
that they would put me in a hermetically sealed bottle. They'd put him in the same one. I mean, he's a complete contaminant. His genetics, were so degenerate compared to what we're talking about here.
And yet they say there's something in his life that was even for the people in the most advanced stages of life and life they could learn something from that, or they got something.
Of course,
which is
different. Right. He's a lesson for everyone in every age and whatnot. But just I'm trying to get us to humans are not used to thinking about the stuff we're talking about here. We're used to just this magical and it's all about me sort of stuff, we're talking about stuff that humans have never considered. And I'm trying to just stress that by getting you to put Jesus in the context here. Now, Jesus the man at his best is not up to what these people are doing.
So, Chris, how long, you probably envisioned this somehow or unpacked it a little bit. How long would you say our world is away from the second stage of life?
Oh, my God.
If you had to guess.
Well, I mean, the easiest way to think about that is just...
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's just, go back to the planetary mortal epics.
Right.
And just... look at how, think about, maybe we're going to have a magisterial sun next and we'll try to kind of get back on track. Well, if things go like normal, how long are normal magisterial sun ages, and there may be many of those. I mean, you could be talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years before we get to light and life. It could be way, way in the future. And then again, you say, yes, but we're a special world. Maybe it's accelerated. Yeah, you could argue it that way. But we're also a decimal world where it was so complicated and it was going to take so long, our Adam and Eve despaired. Right? See, so you can argue it both ways. Maybe you could argue they kind of cancel each other out, the accelerating issues and the de-accelerating issues. And so maybe it would be kind of the normal. So you go back and look at those normal times and it's like, those are like tens of thousands of years, and we're a long ways away. Even if you imagine Michael coming and all this sort of stuff, right? I mean, again, if Michael comes, he's just like any other being coming. They come in an evolutional mode. They come to engage it, as it is, and just foster it as it is. They don't come to say, let's skip all the normal steps. Right? That's Lucifer, right? Michael's not going to come as another rebellion and say, it was wrong for Lucifer to say we could skip all the steps, but it's okay for me to say, no, it's not okay for him to skip all those steps either.
my follow-on question on that is I often wonder why it is they tell us all this that's so far away from us, which is something that by the time we end up experiences, this book may or may not even be... remember.
They tell us all this, even though it's so far away, because they're trying to get you to live a life in the truth of this. See, but notice we want, I don't want the truth of this. I want the fact of this. I want it to factually be the second stage of light and life, and I want to live on that planet. Right? You don't need the fact of it. All you need is the truth of it. Put your life into the truth of this long-term perspective. It'll completely change the hyperventilating way that you're living your life right now. Right? Remember how they tell you we're trying to cram everything we can imagine into one? Yeah. We, you know, it's to the point where we all need paper bags to keep from, you know, passing out. We need to think long term. And then, I could go on all the detail, all the various things that we think we should do now. You know, like we tried to point out. Remember they gave us that little vignette about what's going on in a world in the first stage of light and life. Why did they do that? Because they're trying to point out, you're trying to do things that are not supposed to be done until you're in the first stage of light and life. And you are tens of thousands of years away from that. So if you try to do them now, you can forget about your civilization. You'll collapse it. And you think it's a long time till light and life now? Wait till you stick in a multi-hundred year, who knows, thousands of years of interregnum. You know, because you got so excited. Right? They're telling you those things so that you stop trying to do then now and you do now better.
Getting to a better perspective.
Right, trying to give you the big picture. So that you need the big picture so that you can approach your life top down, philosophically. Right? Everyone is trying to approach our lives scientifically or religiously from the bottom up in some hyperactive mode. Well, just a bigger scientific sledgehammer and we'll be enlightened life, or just a bigger religious sledgehammer and we'll be enlightened life. No. You'll be in the dark ages if you get a bigger sledgehammer. That's what they're trying to teach us. The whole point of the revelation is to give you the big picture. And the big picture is big. Okay? Right? Like I was just trying to stress. It's a bigger picture than humans ever imagined a big picture could be.
By far.
Right. By millions fold, right? Yeah. It's a bigger picture than we've never tried to understand our lives in such a vast spatial temporal context.
And it's more organized or whatever you want to call it than you could possibly imagine.
Right. And everything has its place and its time. You know, there's nothing to panic about. You don't have to fundamentally worry, you know, that if you don't rearrange the molecules properly today, that this world is going to collapse. No, the Most High is ruling the kingdoms of men, let alone all the other countless beings. To try to just bring some sanity into ourselves. And because we're getting so animated that we're about to do ourselves in as a civilization. We need to focus on what we should be focusing on and not everything else, right? It's like our education system, you know, instead of focusing on the few rudimentary things that a basic education should be focusing on, we're focusing on everything else, you know? And so the kids have been exposed to everything else, but they can't, you know, read, write, or do basic arithmetic. So that everything else that you tried to give them, that has no foundation to sit on. So did you really give it to them? No. Just like we were just reading. You'd like to give people a greater philosophy. Well, you can't do it on a lesser foundation. Right? We're just so getting ahead of ourselves. We need to patiently teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. And if we all master that, okay, then we can think about going to something more significant.
Like the tadpole.
How are you? If you have an ignorant, illiterate society, how is civilization going to go on? It's not going to go on. So you can have all kinds of visions of sugar plums dancing in your light and life head, right? You know, but it's not going to happen. Okay.
Kermit, he's wondering, for our planet without a material son and daughter, he's wondering who will assume their role. He said, we've talked of Machaventa assuming the role of material son. Mm-hmm. Who plays daughter?
I was going to bring that up here as it went a little farther forward, but let's go ahead and just mention it now. See, that's an obvious glaring thing. You know, we're seeing how important the Adam and Eve were here in the first stage of light and life. How does that work for us? Right? I mean, if Machaventa assumes role of material son, you know, in sort of guiding all of the biologic issues, well, is he adequate for this role, though? Maybe, you know, it's like, well, maybe know, he would still work. He's a son, right? You know, so maybe he would still work to be the interface with the planetary sovereign. But what about the finaliters? Right. I mean, again, the revelators don't know the answers to these questions, so I certainly don't know the answers to these questions. There's all kinds of mysteries about how we're going to get the things in place that we need. At some point, there's got to be an effective substitute for the stuff we're reading about here.
We know we have this.
I mean, you know, you can even wonder, it's like, well, can a Melchizedek, even one who was incarnated like Machiaventa, when all is said and done and we get to light and life, can he fully do everything that the planetary sovereign normally does? Is he a complete substitute for that? Or will even that role have to be augmented? Will he have to have assistance that normally you wouldn't have? Or, I mean, I don't know, but you're just, you know, all you can notice is, wow, well, we don't have an Adam and Eve. We don't have a planetary prince. So we've got a substitute for all this stuff in some way.
There was a comment about we're looking favorably at you know, plans to augment or foster higher spiritual types.
Well, I mean, you've got the, you know, the issues of they're trying to make sure that before someone definitively takes charge of the biologic situation, that it doesn't totally collapse, right? You can't biologically uplift nothing. Just like Michael couldn't spiritually uplift nothing, and so Melchizedek tried to make sure there was something to uplift.
It sounded like something relatively more immediate compared to some of the longer.
Yeah, yeah. So, right, anyway, you know, just we could go on and on and on. Yeah. There's all these question marks that we don't know the answers to. Anyway.
I Googled that, but I didn't find it.
So back to this. You know, we see how it should be rather jarring, rather startling, you know, the kind of language they're using, drastic and purge. And, you know, it even at this late stage, but it should stress how important that we start to do something now.
Yeah.
Right? It should remind you of just how fundamental this is. Like I pointed out, you know, we'd love to eliminate poverty, you know, and we can spend trillions of dollars on a war on poverty and stuff, and the revelators say, well, that's all fine and dandy, but you just wasted all that money, because fundamentally poverty doesn't have to do with redistribution. You can redistribute until you're blue in the face and it won't change poverty. Poverty's genetic. Right? You need to rearrange, you know, genes on the chromosomes, not dollars in the outer life.
See, and unfortunately, we don't have a good life care.
And we don't know how to do that. But see, but again, it would at least say, well, okay, we can't fundamentally fix the poverty thing now. So let's stop imagining we can, wasting our time on something that we need to do the things that we can do now, focus, instead of doing these things that we imagine we can do.
Focus.
Right?
I just have to throw this
out.
You know, we now have marriage as a right. Marriage is supposed to be a regulating mechanism on this issue. Now marriage is a right, and why is it a right? Because in our spiritual idealism, we wanted to make people who can't even procreate able to marry. I mean,
again, there's all kinds of things. I mean, these are very complex issues. You know, and again, you know, we don't want to go off on all these tangents, but just that's what I'm just trying to invoke in you. Not just, you know, start to reflect on how many things that we've got muddled together. How many ways we're thinking about a certain issue erroneously. Right? There's no wise philosophic objectivity that we're applying to all of our institutions, the institution of marriage, you know, or any other institution you can think of. There's no philosophic picture here. We just have wild-eyed desires, you know, of perfection by fiat. Okay. All right. Okay, let's keep going here.
From the second stage on throughout the career of a settled planet, The teacher's sons serve as counselors to the Finaliters. During such missions, they serve as volunteers and not by assignment. And they serve exclusively with the Finaliter Corps, except that, upon the consent of the system sovereign, they may be had as advisors to the planetary Adam and Eve.
Okay, there's what I was just pointing to a little bit ago. Notice that you're thinking, oh, we've got all these advisors. Do the Adam and Eve naturally have access to that wise advice from on high? No. No. It's like, no, you figure it out yourself. Okay. That's the normal order of things. You know, if they're going to get some sort of really definitive help from on high, there has to be special permission. The system sovereign has to rule that that isn't... That doesn't short-circuit the evolutionary process, and hence isn't a rebellious act. You know, for someone to get that kind of big picture when they shouldn't have that much of a big picture yet. And so that's always in play. Again, we have to remember, if it's true for Adam and Eve here in the second stage of light and life, how much is it true for us right now? Right? In general, they're saying, yeah, I know you're ignorant, but that's part of the process. Figure it out.
Question was just asked about, we have no Adam and Eve. They're already on the evolutionary trail
right. That
we're on. On section 3, the planet of the size of Urantia is fairly well settled. They'd have young material sons and daughters brought from several from the headquarters system to
right. Remember one, you know, to go back to that. Remember, some of the revelators, yes, speculate that that's one way you could make up for our Adam and Eve by bringing other material sons and daughters here. You know, even possibly bringing, you know,
their
children that they took off, or even you could bring their children. You know, that are still on Gerasim, you know.
Sure.
There's the ones on Indentia, right? There's, you know, that were taken off of here. There's still their pure line children on Gerasim. Yeah, all those are in play.
Okay.
But again, you know, there's all these things. You can speculate endlessly. But that's certainly an option. But again...
Did you get your question answered?
Yeah.
You didn't
finish your question.
No, that was it.
Yeah.
Besides just the assistants, the Adam and the young... material sons and daughters that are brought to assist. Why not bring an experienced pair of material sons and daughters to take the place of ours that have traveled on?
Right. And again, the thing that we can't answer about that is, no matter how experienced a pair you might imagine to come to take the place of our Adam and Eve that we lost, do we know exactly what it is that the that is inherent in the Adam and Eve at this point that allows them to do this stuff? You know, and the Adam and Eve have been evolving on the world for hundreds of thousands of years up to this point too. They're synchronized with the planet. Or you bring some off-worlders, they don't have that. Right? So, I mean, we don't understand all of the physics of this. Right? We don't just have simple Ford's interchangeable parts thing going on here.
Plug
and play. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, since we don't know exactly what's required, we could, you know, we're speculating wildly to talk about this stuff. Yep.
Speaking of speculation, David Jones is asking, what is your best guess, Chris, about who and when would be the next visitation, the next sun?
The most obvious next sun would be a magisterial sun in the not-too-distant future. The reason that's the most logical thing is this is a philosophic... a revelation meant logically to be a precursor to the philosophic uplifter of the magisterial sun. In the same way that Machaventa was trying to shore up the spiritual issues for the spiritual uplifter, this is obviously trying to shore up the philosophic issues for the philosophic uplifter. You know, and then just the simple thing of, you know, what would be the most reasonable guess? You skipped over the magisterial sun Wouldn't that be the most reasonable one to do next? But again, you can't say for certain. Like I said, I mean, they could bring in beings that aren't even revealed in the fifth epoch of Revelation. There's all kinds of unrevealed sons. Who knows? Right? But in terms of what we know, and what's the simplest assumption, it would be the magisterial son. And, you know, probably not in the very distant future. A couple hundred years from now, maybe, or something. But, of course, it could be tomorrow. You don't know. But just, you know, simple terms, you know, you've got the evolution in the mind. You start getting a collective expression of the seventh adjutant, which is obviously coming up not in the not-too-distant future. That would be an obvious, helpful precursor for the philosophic uplifter. If you had a collective expression of the philosophic impulse, wouldn't that be handy and logical for the philosophic uplifter to leverage off of? So, you know, you could guess that might happen sometime, you know, around the middle of this century. Give it a little time to set in. Send in the magisterial son. You know, as I say, you know, 150, 200 years, something maybe.
I'll check the bulletins.
Okay. But again, that's all speculation.
He'll still be a sleeping survivor by
then. All right. Let's see here. Okay, just, you know, they're going to keep mentioning it. Let me just point it out. That the teacher sons, you know, are serving in all kinds of different, like they're saying, voluntary helper modes. You'll see them just keep mentioning that. We don't have to bring it up every time. But that's you remember, because we're fundamentally just doing higher and higher stages of coordination, and there are those sort of fundamental seeds of that coordination, because they're Trinity offspring. So that's why they keep popping up all over the places, you know, as helping these beings and helping that being and whatnot. Okay, let's go to the third stage.
Three, the third stage of light and life. During this epoch, the inhabited worlds arrive at a new appreciation of the Ancients of Days, the second phase of God, the sevenfold, and the representatives of these super universe rulers enter into new relationships with the planetary administration.
Read that next level one, too.
In each succeeding age of settled existence, the finaliters function in ever-increasing capacities. There exists a close working connection between the finaliters, the evening stars, the super angels, and the Trinity teacher sons.
Okay. Let me just hit that last little side point first. You may recall, what paper is that? Back in, let's see, that's paper 37, section 2, when they talked about the evening stars. That whole section on the evening stars, they talked about this issue, that you've got this close relationship between the finaliters, the evening stars, and the Trinity teacher sons. You may even recall they gave you a little further hint about that the evening stars have a very transcendent, mysterious synchronization with the gravity messengers, you know, that are working with the finaliters. So there's all kinds of very, very transcendent, very high things going on that are very much oriented towards the grand universe being settled in light and life. Right. So just remember that that's what's in play when they remind you of that trio there. They're reminding you of that very super additive, transcendent ministry geared towards the whole grand universe being settled in light and life, and the finaliters are fostering that really big picture sort of ministry. Okay, so there's that. But then, remember how they told us before we got into this section, I guess it was back in that previous section, how the first stage of light and life you know, in the initial age of light, the revelation of truth is enlarged to embrace the workings of the universe of universes. Remember that? And then while the deity study of the second age is the attempt to master the protean concept of the nature, mission, ministry, associations, origin, and destiny of the creator's sons, the first level of God, the sevenfold. Okay? Okay, so let's just remind ourselves that pattern that's going through these ages. So you had the first level of God, the sevenfold, with the second stage that we just read. Here you see them, now we're getting to the third stage, and so now we have the second level, the second phase, as they call it here, of God, the sevenfold. So let's think about how that all makes sense. Now, on the one hand, if you look back at the beginning of the paper, in the preface, when they were first introduced these stages of light and life, remember how there's a parallel to the bigger picture of a planetary stage followed by a system stage, constellation stage, local universe stage, etc., working up the hierarchy, that you have those big picture stages in microcosm on the world as you go through the world's seven stages. So we go first, second, third. We're doing planet, local system, constellation. Okay? So here when we see them mentioning the Ancients of Days, we know how close the Ancients of Days are with the Most Highs of the constellation. So you immediately think, oh, yeah, that seems to be matching up. You think back, and oh, yeah, and they even mentioned that the system sovereign had to give the consent there if Adam and Eve were going to get those advisors. Okay, so you think local system level. You just, you know, noticing if anything they're saying seems to be kind of matching into that pattern, that in the second one you're kind of working at a local system level, and here you're kind of getting up to a constellation sort of picture. Mm-hmm. So we see that seems to jive. But the real key is bringing in those levels of God, the sevenfold. So again, you know, if you look at the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart here, the key thing to think about is, because we're going up levels of coordination as we're going up these stages of light and life, you should be able to appreciate a very direct relationship to the levels of the cosmic mothers that you can see on the chart here. You know, so let's see if we can see that. Okay, so if in the second stage we're supposedly doing the second stage of light and life, if we're doing that first phase of God, the sevenfold, okay, that would be, that you know, and they mentioned the creator sons. So that's that level here with the creator sons, the master physical controllers, and the creative mother spirits, right? So it's the creative mother spirits that are the mothers at that level. Okay, so let's see if that makes sense. So you have the mind space of the whole local universe, but the creative mother spirit has a very precise expression down in each local system. You know, that's attuned to the genetics of that local system. You know, remember, we're thinking about getting these genetics up to speed. Well, you know, what does that mean? It means getting them so that they are as synchronized with that first material son and daughter in our local system, that prototype pair of the biology in this local system. You know, all these worlds in light and life are trying to get up to synchronize biologically with that pair. The mind in this local system is attuned fundamentally to that initial pair. Okay? Those biologic prototypes in our system.
Even though the Mother Spirit and Creator Son sort of make you think of the local universe versus...
Right. I was just going to address that. Right?
Sorry, I'm always ahead of you.
Right, see, so now remember what we were doing. I was reminding you that they were saying that these stages of light and life are like, you know, one day the local universe will be settled in light and life, okay? But a fourth stage world is effectively a world that's like when a local universe, a whole local universe is settled in light and life. So that big picture is focalized down onto a world. You fundamentally are always in that mode where some big picture, ever bigger picture, you know, is focalized all the way down to a world. So you're seeing that there. Yes, the creative Mother Spirit, like I said, is the mind of the whole local universe, right? But you've got this focalization down to the local system. Okay? That you're seeing, that's how it's syncing up. You know, if you go up to the next notch, you know, in the third stage, where they're saying you're giving you the second level of God the Sevenfold, the Ancients of Days, right? I mean, that's this one. Here's the Ancients of Days on the second level of the Sevenfold, right? The Supreme Power Centers are also there. And what's the Cosmic Mother? That's the Reflective Mother Spirits, right? That's the Super Universe Mother, okay? So you're focusing that high a level of coordination is being brought down onto a world, right? It's coordination, big picture, whole. That big of a whole is, you know, being focalized down onto a world in the third stage of light and life. It's, you know, it's essentially that, even though, like we were saying, in terms of those stages, it's like constellation. When you're thinking about the level of coordination, the coordination is even higher. Because, you know, there's any given unit is always fundamentally in a much bigger context. Okay? So as you move up these things and just in terms of going from planet to local system, the constellation, the local universe, the minor sector, that moves up, you know, kind of in arithmetic fashion. The other will move up kind of more geometrically, right, much more non-linearly, and be bringing in really huge pictures of coordinate wholeness, okay, for that part, that ever-advancing part, right, the whole is advancing even greater, you know, behind that, you know, to supply the context for that part. Okay, now that's maybe a little complicated. I'm trying to see if you can get the picture here.
So right. Is this the way that the seven super universes are becoming, in truth, like the central universe? They're gradually evolving, and as you can see, each stage eventually evolve until they eventually all get up to that perfect level, almost, so to speak, eventually. And then the supreme manifests, and then... So it's,
right.
But however, right. This is done through the... Through evolution versus fiat, through a different...
Right. It's all being done through evolution. And just notice, you know, remember how they, you know, like for one individual to become an absentite being, you know, everything in being has to cross that threshold at the same time. See, you're seeing how in order to evolve the universe of universes, right, the higher it evolves towards the grand universe being settled in light and life, the more that next notch up of evolution requires a radically bigger wholeness to be in play to achieve that next little differential notch up. Okay? And so that's what you're seeing here, where you're bringing in this level, you know, is the individual super universe level that we now are bringing in terms of coordination. The individual super universe level here in the third stage of light and life. Okay? And then the one other little thing you can throw in, you know, if you look on this chart, there's sort of a zeroth level here. You know, it's the mechanical mind controllers, in other words, the mechanical controllers, those kinds of master physical controllers, they're not technically mothers. They're sort of zeroth level, see, cosmic mothers. But you know, you should be able to see that sort of precursor in play here. So if I drop from the second stage of light and life, which was here, down one notch to the first stage of light and life, do I see something there that matches up with this level of coordination being the mechanical controllers?
Yeah.
It said, this is made possible by the final discoveries of physical science in liaison with the enlarged planetary functions of the master physical controllers.
There you are.
Like I said, more, you know, and there's another way you can understand just how much the environment, right, that in the first stage of light and life is fundamentally modified. Those master physical controllers, which are a presence right now, become a much more tangible, ubiquitous presence. They're a ubiquitous presence right now, but they're going to begin to become a much more directly impacting tangible presence. Right? Like they're saying there. See, and that's exactly what you'd expect from the hierarchy here of coordination in the levels of the cosmic mothers. Okay. So you can kind of say, ooh, I can tell where we're going to go next. You know, we'll see if it matches up. Okay, but that's where we are. We basically have that super universe level of coordination being focalized down here. Let's see, anything else we needed to say in there? No, I think, you know, we basically got it. You've got this, you know, like they're pointing out, the representatives of the Ancients of Days enter into new relationships. That's just reminding you that it's what we're talking about here, administrative readjustments. You know, you're starting to get beings that they haven't even revealed that are working very directly with the Ancients of Days that are coming there to be right in the trenches and literally getting their hands dirty, you know, in the day-to-day issues on that planet.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, so you can imagine getting all the way up there, you know, finally being Uversa as an ascender. And we've talked about how you're, starting to work with the Ancients of Days and stuff. See, that long journey you have up to there, see, that all has been brought down. You've got beings on these worlds that are starting to work quite intimately with the Ancients of Days, and they haven't even left their nativity sphere yet. Right? Okay. Okay, let's keep going here.
During this or the following age, a teacher's son, assisted by the ministering spirit quartet, becomes attached to the elective mortal chief executive, who now becomes associated with the planetary sovereign as joint administrator of world affairs. These mortal chief executives serve for 25 years of planetary time. And it is this new development that makes it easy for the planetary Adam and Eve to secure release from their world of long-time assignment during the following ages.
Okay, so you've got the basics there, but notice how that plays into some of our speculating we were doing a little bit ago. See, here they're pointing out how mortals can start to take on what Adam and Eve are doing. See, so there's obviously all kinds of possibilities for how this could play out in terms of making up for our issues.
Of course, a lot of them have the Adam and Eve bloodstock anyway, right?
Right, sure. Right, I mean, you know, they're just pointing out that the humans are now at a level where they're basically like material sons and daughters, see? And
right,
and they can really substitute for them.
That means they can leave then?
Right, yeah, like they're saying there, see, it makes it easy for the planetary Adam and Eve to secure release from the world. They'll keep talking about that, so, you know, we'll pick up on that details here in a little bit. But, you know, one thing that strikes you is just 25 years. They only serve for 25 years, which is a pretty short period of time. So they're taking rapid turns at this job.
Yeah. Term limits.
Which seem like a long time here, but they live so much longer, so you're saying...
Right, and, you know, compared to 500 years, 25 is not very long. So you just notice that it's a relatively short period of time that they serve. So they're just, you know, what's the truth of that? That, you know, that it's, that you want the variability of different beings, you know, giving you the dynamic, you know, one being can't supply the requisite dynamics that you need to the phenomenon. What was that?
It's almost like a generation.
Right, right, so. Yep.
So in a typical lifespan, you'll see 20 of these guys rotate.
Yeah, yeah, so, see, and I'm just trying to get you to think about this because that'll help you to think about how dynamic, how fluid maybe you might say the culture is there. It's, you know, it's not a this static sort of a thing. It's a very dynamic, active thing that you know, literally has these kind of short timescales involved to it. Okay. You know, we just couldn't keep up the pace, you know, that much change, that much variability. Okay. You notice he's an elective, right? So you've got a whole election process still going on. They'll explain the spirit quartet here in the next paragraph. Let's see. And then just, you know, here, sure, again, the teacher's son, you know, is yet another way that they're assisting. Okay. All right.
The ministering spirit quartets consist of the seraphic chief of the sphere, the super universe,
Seraphic
counselor, the archangel of translations, and the omniphim, who functions as the personal representative of the assigned sentinel stationed on the system headquarters. But these advisors never proffer counsel unless it is asked for.
Proffer. Proffer is how you pronounce that. Okay, so you've got this, you've got the chief of seraphim, you've got a seconophim counselor that's there. Remember how they mentioned you have an archangel that's in charge of all the translations going on that came with the temple.
That's not translations by language.
Not language.
Yeah, not language translations. Fusing. And then even an omniphim that's taking on that really big picture role with the assigned sentinel. Remember how you've got, we mentioned them not too long ago, you've got the supreme executives, you know, for each of the seven super universes that are on the infinite spirits worlds, you know, in the central universe. And they've got these representatives out here, one at the local universe level and then ones at all the local system levels, these assigned sentinels.
Refresh my memory of what an assigned sentinel does. He's not an executioner right now.
No, assigned sentinels, like as I'm just refreshing, they're the representative of the supreme executive down at the local system level.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they're bringing in that element of administration
as above.
You know, very directly into play. Okay. And we got this really complicated thing with master spirits and supreme executives and ancients of days. There's all these different, you know, influences on the whole thing. Okay, but when all is said and done, you got them saying the same thing. But these advisors never proffer counsel unless it is asked for. No one is going to be sticking a foot forward and short-circuiting the evolutionary process. I mean, they'll respond to a request, but they're not going to initiate. Right? That request is a product of evolution, so that's okay. Right? If it's coming naturally.
Yeah, that everybody should have to get a chance to figure it out for themselves.
Free will has to have full domain to manifest, right? Yeah. It's totally inscrutable. No one knows how all these different free wills are all going to play together and how it's all going to work out. But everyone trusts it, right? And just lets it play out. If it's the will of the planetary administrators, that's what everyone goes with.
Trust.
No matter how much some high being might say, well, it's not the way we've done it before. You know, they're not thinking like that.
Right.
They trust the process and they just let it roll. I mean, you know, the really experienced high beings know that you can start with any set of finite facts
right.
and take it forward.
Right.
Right? It's yeah. There's no special set. It's like it can only be this way and nothing else.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've often had musings about people that before we had the Urantia book and how unfair it might have been to them that they had to live in this darkness.
Mm. Yeah. Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But. Actually, they didn't need the Urantia book.
No?
I needed the Urantia book. I needed it desperately. And it's here.
Yeah. It comes, you know, when it's finally needed, and in many ways when it finally can be used. You know, it's really not totally appropriate to say, oh, I mean, Descartes lived and died, you know, yearning for the Urantia book. No, his philosophic mind, as great a mind as he was, it was still too primitive, you know, to relate to this. I mean, you know, he's 100 times smarter than I'll ever be, but that's not relevant. You know, you think about his best efforts at philosophy, you know, and he's trying to put the mind in the pineal gland, and, you know, it's all very primitive. You know, it's only at the beginning of the 20th century that there's potentially minds that if they really challenge themselves, can fundamentally even interface with this thing. Yeah. So,
even with inferior genetics.
It's all as it should be. Okay, let's see. And, there's something else I was going to say there. I lost my train of thought. But anyway, that you've got just that fundamental issue again of you just trust it to come up, you know, in all of its, even to the revelators, inscrutable ways. And you know that it'll all work out in the end. All right. So now, okay, what was that?
Were you going to step through all of those? I guess we're pretty good on that.
Yeah. It wasn't that. It was something else. I can't remember. Anyway, well, it'll come up if it's important. Okay, before we read this next one, so just let me presage it. Okay, so remember, the fourth stage of light and life, that's kind of a biggie, kind of a milestone, because that's when, you know, on that world, you're having a phenomenon that's kind of like when a whole local universe is settled in light and life.
Wow.
Okay. So you're getting into kind of some pretty big stuff there. Right? You know, it's what you would suspect. It's like, well, I know when a local universe is settled in light life, it finally gets plugged into the super universe proper, you know, actually gets to have, you know, be represented at the super universe level and all the councils and all that sort of stuff, you know. So it really starts to go global, you know, you might say, in contrast to its localization like it's been for so long. Okay. So let's see what we see along those lines.
4. The fourth stage of light and life. On the worlds, the Trinity Teacher's sons appear in new roles. Assisted by the creature Trinitized sons, so long associated with their order, they now come to the worlds as volunteer counselors and advisors to the planetary sovereign and his associates. Such couples, Paradise Havona Trinitized Sons and Ascender Trinitized Sons, represent differing universe viewpoints and diverse personal experiences, which are highly serviceable to the planetary rulers.
Okay, let's just, you know, remind, and I guess you can go back and look up some more yourself. So they're bringing, remember a long, long time ago we talked about creature Trinitized Sons. So they're bringing them into play. That's, let's see, so that's paper 22, section 7, is where they, they talked about those. That was on page 251, is the part of that section where they mentioned Ascender Trinitized Sons, Paradise Avona Trinitized Sons, and then there's a third kind, remember, the Trinitized Sons of Destiny. That's when you have a Paradise Avona native with a finaliter, so that you get that huge super additive consequence, right? And you get this really transcendent being. So those aren't in play. Remember, the Trinitized Sons of Destiny are worth the architects of the Master Universe and stuff. But there's other two. So, and remember, fundamentally, what's the difference between those two? The Ascender Trinitized Sons, so those are creature Trinitized Sons that embody that bottom-up phenomenon of those Ascenders. And then the Paradise Avona Trinitized Sons, those creature Trinitized Sons embody the top-down nature of the Paradise Avona citizens. So you have a, that's when they say, where did they say that? Represent differing universe viewpoints. Yeah, bottom up, top down. Right? Okay. Those are the two viewpoints, right? And so there's like a fullness of the bottom up and the fullness of the top down, right? But not the whole picture. So that's what's in play. And remember, oh, wait, we were talking about bottom up and top down before. Remember when we got started with the biology? You know, they were seeing too that the mortals had kind of a full bottom up internal nature and could then bring the full top down nature into them. So you're seeing here, they're starting to very directly leverage off of that with beings that embody that on a grand scale. Okay. And are fostering that more in the mortals. Okay, so that, and you know, the more you can get that, the bigger picture you can get into a simultaneous bottom-up, top-down, the more you're going to synchronize with the Supreme. So remember, the Supreme is the super-additive consequence of the total bottom-up in association with the total top-down. Right? So you're getting, you can tell, oh yeah, we are getting into some very, very vast levels of coordination here, obviously. Let's just, you know, let's just think about it, right? If you go up another notch, right, so they're going to be working on that next notch up of the sevenfold in terms of understanding that level of that deity. What's the level of mother there? Well, now we're up to the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. We're up to the collective super universe level, okay? Transcendent of the individual super universe level, right? The kind of the mind womb that you're going to be plugged into as a finaliter out and about in the universe of universes, okay? So up to that even more high. And see, and it literally is, like I was just saying, it's going to start to have a close to the whole finite sort of picture aspect into play. It's not literally grand universe level, yeah, but it's right there
hugging
up there on the ceiling at this collective super universe level. Okay. All right, so let's see. What else do we have in there? Let's keep going. Let's get another one in here.
At any time after this age, the planetary Adam and Eve can petition the sovereign creator's son for release from planetary duties in order to begin their paradise ascent, or they can remain on the planet as directors of the newly appearing order of increasingly spiritual society composed of advanced mortals striving to comprehend the philosophic teachings of the finaliters portrayed by the brilliant evening stars, who are now assigned to these worlds to collaborate in pairs with the Sekhanafim from the headquarters of the super universe.
Okay, so you got the basics of the beings that are in play. Brilliant evening stars are continuing to help with the interface issue. Okay, but, you know, like we've been stressing, It's ever, ever more so. Striving to comprehend the philosophic teachings of the Finaliters.
Portrayed by the evening stars. Does that mean these guys are seeing the evening stars? No. I mean, how do they...
The evening stars apparently are directly interacting.
Somehow.
Right, somehow, yeah. And again, the evening stars have this mysterious transcendent nature that not even the revelators understand that allow them to be interfaced with this really high stuff. Okay. So on one end they can go really high, and the other end they can reach down pretty low. But I was just trying to stress, what level of wholeness are we trying to embrace now? What level of philosophic teachings? Right? That teaching about the wholeness, not the religious part, not the scientific part, the whole, the philosophic whole. It's literally at that, on the one hand you could think of as the collective super universe level, but maybe a little bit more in line in understanding. Remember we said this fourth stage was like that local universe stage? Mm-hmm. Another way of talking about the collective super universe level would be to describe it as the universe of universes level. Right? The universe of local universes, remember, universe of universes is technically universe of local universes. I see, so that's the level at which, seeing how it all logically fits together, that you've got this effective local universe level of light and life on this planet, and the whole that you're teaching is the universe of universes whole, transcendent of a local universe whole, or a super universe whole, even. But this big collective wholeness. Okay. All right. So yeah. So you can just really see how it makes so much sense now. For there to be a universe of local universes. I mean, what could coordinate local universes into a universe of universes? Right? That's got to be something that spans all 700,000. Local universes, right? See, it's the wholeness, right, is that collective super universe level. And that's what allows that universe of universes to be. Right? It has to be logically coordinated like that. It's, you know, it's not magic. Yep.
Well, I just think to do that, there has to be sufficient diversity in the populace.
Yeah.
And we can't all be the same.
Yeah.
Which kind of is an idea you get, we get rid of all of these retarded ones.
All the genetic, yeah. So where does the diversity come from that you're pointing out that you're going to need lots and lots of diversity? Personality.
Yeah.
Every personality is absolutely unique.
Totally unique.
Right? And the fact that you've purified the biologic foundation, that full, more and more of that full absolute uniqueness of that personality has a means to manifest. So the more you eliminate just biologic diversity, the more genuine personal diversity can manifest. And so diversity is conserved, if you will, see?
In each and every one of us?
Yes. Yeah, right. Each of us has an absolute unique personality. You know, so more and more, you don't have to wait for way forward in your ascension career to be starting to really manifest, you know, a lot of the untapped potentials of your personality, right? They have a place to manifest on these worlds and a vehicle to manifest through. Right now, I mean, my personality can't manifest really because the vehicle is completely inadequate. Right, my mind is not coordinatable enough, right, for much of my personality to manifest.
But the celestial coordination at the same time, ongoing, to help us with this manifestation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, we know it's coincidentally, even though we can't get our personality diversity really in play to give us a diversity that would be helpful for society, we have a biologic diversity. Right, that provides all of those differentials that you need to have super additive consequences. It's just eventually you use up all of the all of those potentials that are just across those biologic differentials, and so you can really eliminate a lot of those biologic differentials, you know, but you still need differential. So it's the fundamentally the personality differential that starts to be, you know, the real potential in this system. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's see. Did we get everything there? All right, you see how, I told you they've mentioned the Adam and Eve here in a second. So any time after the fourth, the Adam and Eve can petition for release. So you kind of think, oh, so if we kind of get up, this seemed like kind of a real apex sort of a thing as we described it. So it seems makes sense that now they can, you know, they can move on. I mean, they're not fundamentally needed there anymore. Everything that fully replaces them is in place.
Our work here is done.
Our work is really here done. But like they pointed out, every world is different. Sometimes they are needed for subtle new things. But, you know, but it's sort of like, you know, Michael could have left any time after, you know, such and so, but he stayed on. Yeah. Technically, they could leave after the fourth. All right, let's see. Then we got that last little bit there, don't we? Yeah.
The finaliters are chiefly engaged in initiating the new and supermaterial activities of society, social, cultural, philosophic, cosmic, and spiritual. As far as we can discern, they will continue this ministry far into the seventh epoch of evolutionary stability, when possibly they may go forth to minister in outer space, whereupon we conjecture their places may be taken by absentite beings from paradise.
So again, just speculating that absentite beings will come in and fill the role, which makes sense because you're just expanding, you know, basically expanding that absentite core that is the central universe out to encompass the whole super universe level.
Right.
Okay, but again, the specifics. Notice, you know, so from this point on, they're just saying, okay, the finaliters just continue to minister, and fundamentally, what are they working on? More and more to bring the top down. You know, there's that list again, even a little bit more expanded, to really bring it not only fully down, but out into the cultural and social outer life. But see, they're just working on getting more and more of that personality in place, so more and more of the cosmos can come down and get reflected within. It's a personal living philosophy, and that can manifest down and out into ever higher levels of culture and society. Right. So they're fundamentally the agents of that top-down flow. And like we said, really the whole bottom-up is, you know, has been finished. That's why the Adam and Eve can move on, if no other reason. So you really have done all the bottom-up that there is to do, but there's always more top-down.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, no matter how much of the cosmos you bring in, the cosmos evolves, so there's more to bring in, right? It just keeps going and going and going. So you'll be bringing more and more down in, you know, until finally we've brought every finite thing down in that can be brought down in, and we all transcend the finite. Okay, so now you can see that those are the ones they can say kind of something significant about. Now it all gets pretty vague. You know, don't be fooled by number 7. It's just as vague. It's just they talk about a couple other things. all right, so what do they say about the fifth one here?
5, the fifth stage of light and life. The readjustments of this stage of settled existence pertain almost entirely to the physical domains and are of primary concern to the master physical controllers.
Okay, now we've moved up effectively to the minor sector. And oh yeah, that's right. I remember they're going to teach me a lot about the physical aspect of things when I get up to the minor sector. Okay, so that makes sense. That resonates with this being almost entirely about the physical domains. But we are... The other thing that you notice, they stopped saying it directly, but we can keep moving up the levels of the sevenfold, Okay, so does this make sense? So this, so they would be moving up, in, you know, in terms of trying to teach the deity of the sevenfold, they would be moving up to the next notch. You know, well, the next notch is the supreme level. Right?
Wow.
Okay? You know, now you've got literally, you know, the universal mother. You know, the womb of the whole grand universe. Right? And, exactly. Does this make sense? Well, right now, you know, if you're manifesting on that level, I would think that you're going to very definitively see the expression of the Almighty on Earth. There it is, the Almighty Supreme.
Right.
Right. So, Master Physical Controllers are really taking control of the planet right now in a full almighty sense. It's a direct expressions of the control of the whole, the control that is the almighty. It's being manifest on Earth. They're going to take charge of every automaton on the planet, you know, and everything is just going to become a completely artificial, physical, you know, personality-managed system.
Right. Architectural.
Right, the architectural sphere-like. That's the fifth stage of light and life.
Right, just what I was going to say. Will it be like an architectural sphere, or will it be like a Havona sphere?
No, it can't be like a Havona
that's
sphere.
That's perfect.
Right, because that's totally different material in the central universe, remember? Yeah. Right. The best way to think about it is it's going to be you know, very much now getting to be like an architectural world in terms of the physics of that world. Okay? And see, and it all makes sense if you just keep moving up the levels of the sevenfold, that would be in play. Okay? All right. But that's, you know, that's basically it. You know, most likely in general, you know, that, all the important beings and whatnot are, you know, are not even revealed in the book now. It's you know, like they said, you may not even have an Adam and Eve now in the world. I mean, yeah, the finality are still there, and the Trinity teacher sons, and the planetary sovereign. Yes, you know, but all of the details have kind of transcended the revelation now, in many ways.
So far as the mortals go.
Well, the mortals are all there and doing things, but, you know, the beings that are there helping them in many ways are just, you know, transcendent to the revelation now, okay? You know, they were already, you know, whenever they mentioned someone, it's like, well, we haven't really told you about these beings, but they're, you know, they're helpers of the ancients of days. You know, I mean, they're, you know, basically they're transcending the revelation as we go through these stages here. All right, so that's we've moved up to that level where we really are bringing super universe, a grand universe level of coordination into play, and you can't, you know, the way that can be done now in a very definitive way is the physical part of it. Right, the being part of it, you got to wait for the whole grand universe to get settled in light and life. But you see, as soon as you can, you're really getting the bottom up part of that supreme level getting directly implemented on the planet. Yeah, the master physical controllers are taking control of the planet. All right, so then what about the next one?
6. The sixth stage of light and life witnesses the development of new functions of the mind circuits of the realm. Cosmic wisdom seems to become constitutive in the universe ministry of mind.
Okay, so the, you know, this philosophic nature is becoming, you know, innate now, as you can see. You're getting up to such high levels that it becomes very much innate in the beings.
I mean, you're almost born with it, so to speak.
Yeah, so to speak. It's, you know, it's obviously you still, you know, you're born an infant and there's you know, maturation, but it's starting to become something that happens quite naturally, that it just, you know, you mature like this. Remember, you know, even if we'd gotten the normal biologic uplift, there would be a whole lot of things that we wouldn't have to really work at achieving in terms of philosophic recognition would happen just kind of naturally. Okay. You're at the level now where some really big things are happening naturally. Okay, now how does this all make sense? Well, in a simple moving up, you know, settled enlightened life, we're at major sector level, right? I mean, think about the super universe. You know, you've got individuality, associativity, unity for the three levels of the super universe, right? You've got physical, mindal, spiritual. So, yeah, okay, that makes complete sense that they would be mentioning mind tied to this that's parallel to the major sector. How about in terms of the deity of the sevenfold? Right, if I move up another notch from the supreme level here, okay, now I'm at the level where I have the infinite mother spirit. Right? Okay. You know, I mean, where does mind come from? Okay. Right? See, so that fits right in to moving up the sevenfold. And you know, we'll go ahead and just mention the next one at the same time. You know, when we go to the seventh stage, see, we'd be going up the final notch, right, to the eternal mother-son level. Okay, and you're going, well, why, you know, wouldn't the infinite mother spirit be above the eternal mother-son? Well, in a big picture sense, yes, but we're talking about engagement to us. And the infinite mother spirit can project downward more intimately because that presence can engage us in what we can understand as a spirit-mind presence. A spirit presence that has a further projecting downward mind presence. Spirit-mind. So the mind is the root, spirit on top of it. So that penetrates down more intimately to us. The presence of the Eternal Mother Son is just a spirit presence. See, so relative to how it engages us, it's transcendent. It's up another notch. Right? If you go way up there, you know, towards the end of part four, remember how they give all those different spirit ministries that we're in the presence of, and they, you know, speak of the Eternal Mother Sons as a spirit presence, and the infinite mother spirits as a spirit mind presence, to remind you of just what I'm talking about. So see, when you go to the seventh stage, you know, you're in that, you'd think it's going, should be spirit, because you got matter, mind, spirit for these last three. See, and it is. It's that spirit presence that we experience of the eternal mother son. Spirit gravity, all those sorts of things that are that spirit presence. Okay, so it makes sense in just thinking about minor sector, major sector, super universe headquarters, hierarchy, and it also makes sense moving up the sevenfold, okay, that it's, you got the Almighty, and then you've got that mind, and then you've got that spirit, okay?
Obviously, silly question, obviously at this point, long since before, we've lost, we no longer are utilizing the adjutant mind spirits.
No, everyone still is using adjutant mind spirit.
Still got the adjutant.
Right, no one's a Marantia being.
But everything else is pretty close to it.
All right, but you're obviously maxing out adjutant mind spirits. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, these beings are using adjutant mind like Jesus the man couldn't imagine using adjutant mind, right? I mean, right. The adjutant mind spirits are a very deep phenomenon, right? You're just using the tiny little part down at the bottom of their whole vertical potential. I mean, that's why they call them adjutant mind spirits, to remind you of how vertical a phenomenon they are. Just one little thin level of mind, right? You start with the spirit presence of the Creative Mother Spirit, and you penetrate all the way down to mind. Right? So, I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, you can go all the way up. So you're using adjutant mind in very, very high ways. I mean, right now, the secondary midwares are using the sixth and seventh adjutants. They're using them in a lot higher ways than we're able to use them, though. Right? If for no other reason, our use of the sixth and seventh is being pulled down by the fact that we're also using 1 through 5.
Yeah.
Just the material gravity of 1 through 5 would drag our use of 6 and 7 down. They don't have that, right? Their 6 and 7 usage is liberated from that boat anchor.
Everything else appears to be so close to Morange existence. Something comparable.
Just remember, adjutant mind is a creative mother spirit's mind. Do you think the creative mother spirit could engage these various levels? Yes. Mm-hmm. So humans can, using her mind.
But next is the cosmic mind, the mother, the
right, but again,
higher functioning of the
it's the reason you're, fundamental reason you're using adjutant mind is not that it right now it's not because it can't go up very high. And then when you need to go up higher, you go to Morange mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not quite the proper way to think about it, right? You're using adjutant mind right now because it can directly engage a material brain. Morange mind can't seat on a material brain.
That's the answer.
Right. See, so it's not the ceiling that's changed, it's the floor, right? Okay. Adjutant mind has a deeper floor than Morange mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's,
but they really both have the same ceiling.
That's what it is.
Okay. All right. So you've got this, very high level, very holistic philosophy. That cosmic wisdom seems to become constitutive, in the same way that the three cosmic intuitions are constitutive right now, sort of a full, vast philosophic sort of a mind is constitutive. I mean, it's just there, use it. You don't have to take delight in cultivating the growth of it. It's there, just turn it on and start using it. Yeah. All right, and then finally the seventh here.
The seventh stage of light and life. Early in the seventh epoch, the Trinity teacher, counselor of the planetary sovereign is joined by a volunteer advisor sent by the Ancients of Days. And later on, they will be augmented by a third counselor coming from the Super Universe Supreme Executive.
So there again, you see the Supreme Executive getting more directly involved, like we saw indirectly with the, before with the assigned sentinel being there. Or at least a representative of the assigned sentinel. The assigned sentinel himself wasn't there. So now you've got something that's fundamentally, like they said, this is like the super universe being settled in light and life. So, right, I mean, the full administration that exists is intimately in play. Right, the supreme executive, in a direct sense, not in a downstep sense, from the assigned sentinel, but in his very direct sense, is representing his administrative input into the world now. So. A very high-level thing happening. Okay.
During this epoch, if not before, Adam and Eve are always relieved of planetary duties. If there is a material sun in the Finaliter core, he may become associated with the mortal chief executive. And sometimes it is a Melchizedek who volunteers to function in this capacity. If a midwayer is among the finaliters, all of that order remaining on the planet are immediately released.
Okay, so the fun thing about that is, again, reminding you that even though the finaliters embody nature that's way transcendent of us, they haven't, they haven't burned their bridges behind them, right? I mean, they still embody everything all the way down to our level. And so you're seeing this. I mean, those finaliters that were one-time midwayers, they still embody that level, and there's a footprint that's midwayer-like, see? And so it allows all the midwayers to definitely be immediately released if they haven't been already. And the same way you could see there with, if you have a material son, you know, that's now a finaliter. You know, they can very Adam and Eve-like interact with a mortal chief executive, if that's the reason why the Adam and Eve haven't left already. Maybe there was some ongoing need for them to be interacting with the mortal chief executive. Yeah, it's fine. The material son, former material son, now finaliter, can do that. All right, so that's pretty fancy stuff. The thing is that Adam and Eve are always relieved, it says. But you notice it's only if a midwayer is among the finaliters, all of the remaining, order remaining, them are. So, you there maybe are rare exceptions where you still have some midwayers going on really, really late in the game. They haven't totally, said absolutely there's no more of them now. The fundamental reason why there's that difference, that there's a definite end to the Adam and Eve, but maybe not with the midwayers, is Adam and Eve are, that whole descending son ministry. That they're a hierarchy of parts coming down. Remember, the midwayers are fundamentally a coalescence of the wholeness. They're coalescing out of the supreme. They're not coming down from the infinite spirit, say, or whatever. And so they have an inherent wholeness in them, see, that may still find place even this late in the game. They might embody a vast enough coordinate nature, whole-like nature, holistic nature, that there may still be some need for them even this late in the game. It's because they're coalescing out of the whole. That's why the revelators can't, they admit you can't always predict exactly what's going to happen, the exact numbers or anything like that, or exactly how they'll, especially the secondary midwayers, exactly how that will come to pass. It's shrouded in the inscrutable whole, wholeness of the supreme. That physics. I see. So you're seeing that coming all the way back around here. Origin and destiny are synchronized here, see?
When they talk about midwayers, they can talk about first primary or secondary.
Yeah, and then like we mentioned before, it's frustratingly not specific about the whole difference between the primaries and the secondaries, yeah. They don't sort that out for us. Okay, so they're going to give us a little, see, like I said, they don't really give us much about the seventh stage, but they give us a bit about Adam and Eve. Right. Now, of course, this won't be in play for us, but on a normal world, this is what happens with the Adam and Eve.
Upon obtaining release from their age-long assignment, a planetary Adam and Eve may select careers as follows. Number one, they can secure planetary release and from the universe headquarters start out immediately upon the paradise career, receiving thought adjusters at the conclusion of the Marantia experience.
Okay, so remember the fundamental thing that's in play. The Adam and Eve are going to graduate, if you will, just like the mortals, where they're fusing and going all the way to the local universe headquarters, right? Skipping everything in between. But unlike the mortals that jump all the way, like in our case, to Salvington, right? Remember how we have to go back, and teach, up the hierarchy that we skipped over. See, they start out immediately on the paradise career. Okay, they don't do that going back because they don't need to. I mean, they've got all of that vertical nature all embodied in their long experience on the world, so they don't have to be going back and
been there, done that.
Yeah, right. I see, so that's why they can when they jump there, they just finish up there and go right on. Now you notice what they're doing. Remember, to when they dematerialize material son and daughter, they put them in a quasi Marantia expression. You know, their body, that energy system is put into a, they say it's a quasi Marantia sort of an expression, then they're transported and then rematerialized. See, so here you've got them. They're not getting the thought adjuster here and fusing, right? And then immediately going there. So they're probably, what they're doing, they're put into that quasi-Marantia state again. They're transported. So that's going to be a long trip all the way to the local universe headquarters world by Transport Seraphim. They're there. They're given a Marantia body, sort of an official full-on Marantia body. And still not an adjuster. They finish out the Marantia details there at the headquarters. And then they're humanized, quote unquote, and get an adjuster. You know, and fuse, I'm sure, all instantly, practically with it, right?
So they don't get to go back home to Jerusalem, do they?
You're jumping ahead. But this option is no. This option is no, they don't go back to Jerusalem. Right? So one of the options is, they just go straight from here to the local universe headquarters and, you know, very short, relatively short order, off they go to the super universe ascension, okay? But just notice the details. They're being transported as, you know, basically as a Marantia creature. Only get their adjuster when it's all said and done there. So they would only be humanized at the very end. You know, when we're going to first stage spirit, they would be getting humanized and getting an adjuster. Right, and going to a first stage spirit. Right? Okay. Yeah, so that whole bit of how some mortals don't fuse with their adjuster until they get all the way up there. You know, see, this is kind of sort of that end point like that. So, essentially a human, right? Not getting an adjuster until the very last step before they leave the local universe. Okay. All right, so that's one option. What's option number two?
Two, very often a planetary Adam and Eve will receive adjusters while yet serving on a world settled in light, concomitant, what you said, with the receiving of adjusters by some of their imported pure line children who have volunteered for a term of planetary service. Subsequently, they may all go to universe headquarters and there begin the paradise career.
So remember we were, I was telling you they were going to point this out definitively, and then that whole bit about bringing other material sons and daughters to a world. And they may actually be the pure line children of that Adam and Eve, okay? Coming from, in our case, it would be Gerasim, but from the local system headquarters world. Here you've got them, they're material beings, them and maybe their children too here, okay, those material beings are being humanized. They're humanized in the material rather than humanized in the Marantia. They're getting a thought adjuster, and so they're going to actually fuse, and that material body's going to be vaporized, right? They're going to do that normal routine here, go to the Marantia temple or wherever, okay, but then go straight to the local universe headquarters. Okay, so that's another option. Okay, so they wouldn't have that long journey by Transport Seraphim, right? You got the instantaneous journey via thought adjuster from here to Salvington.
Okay, take
that one. Okay. All right, so that's, I think we got everything there, didn't we? Yeah, so that's another option. What's the third one here?
Three, a planetary Adam and Eve may elect, as do material sons and daughters from the Supreme Capital,
System
Capital, to go direct to the Midnight World for a brief sojourn, there to receive their adjusters.
Okay, so that one, apparently they're going to be dematerialized again, transported in that quasi-Marantia nature, then rematerialized on the Midsonite world, humanized in the material there, get an adjuster, fuse there, and then go to, you know, the local universe headquarters.
Yeah, why?
I remember that.
Melchizedek?
No, well, yeah, I mean, the Midsoniters are, you know, a Melchizedek and a material daughter procreate them. You know, a Melchizedek, you know, puts himself in corporeal form, procreates with a material daughter, produces the Midsoniters. You know, the Midsoniters are involved in a very complex high level of actualization in the universe of universes that's tied back to a pattern in the central universe that's sort of a post-grad level thing to explain. when you unpack the central universe, you can figure out who the Midsoniters really are in terms of the pattern and how they fit in. But you can see here that... you know, occasionally when they mention them, you've got beings coming from different places interacting with them. So that just is telling you that there's some sort of like really complicated associativity that is being, you know, the super additive consequence of all these complex relationships is being, you know, actualized. You know, it gives you some sense that there's some sort of really big picture, complicated thing about these Midsonite worlds. Remember, there's one Midsonite world in each local system. So it's this special world of special associations, you know, that obviously must have something to do with, you know, if each local system is tied to one Havona world, right? You know, it must require a Midsonite world in each local system to fully match that pattern of, you know, of each one of those Havona worlds. It's part of that, obviously manifesting some of the more transcendent things. Because Midsoniters are kind of transcendent of a normal mortal, right?
I'd say so.
Okay. All right, so anyway, that's one of the options. But, you know, each of these you got to think about. It's like, well, okay, they're getting humanized in the material. Are they getting humanized in the Marantia? When are they getting their adjuster? You know, how are they being transported? You know, each of them has a different variation here. Okay, what's the next one?
They may decide to return to the system headquarters, there for a time to occupy seats on the Supreme Court, after which service they will receive adjusters and begin the paradise ascent.
Okay. See, so there they can go back to the local system headquarters. You know, again, I guess you assume they're going to be there materially. So they're going to be humanized in the material, and so then they get an adjuster. They're going to literally fuse. They're going to, you know, need to not blow up, you know, a gerasim when they do that. And then, okay, that whole issue will be in play if they're actually fusing in the material.
Which is also in the Midsonite worlds.
Right, same way with the Midsonite worlds, right? so that one, you know, another variation. But again, when they fuse there, they're going to jump right straight to the local universe headquarters. Yeah. All right. And the last one.
5. They may choose to go from their administrative duties back to their native world to serve as teachers for a season and to become adjuster indwelt at the time of transfer to the universe headquarters.
Okay. See, so... See again, you've got this whole, right, I mean, they're going back, in our case, Gerasim. That's their native world, Gerasim. They're going back to the local system headquarters world, just kind of as a material, you know, son and daughter again. You know, only as teachers, right, to help those, because all those material sons and daughters, I mean, a lot of them are going to eventually serve as Adam and Eve's.
Right.
It'd be great to have an Adam and Eve that's gone all the way through, like maybe all the way through to the seventh stage, come back and teach them and... Okay. And here, see, to become adjuster indwelt at the time of transfer to the universe headquarters. So it's a little vague. It's like, you know, it's like, well, is that
family,
you know? I mean, is it you know right before their transfer? You know, but But see, the time of transfer, it's like, well, they would transport themselves if they fused on that world.
Right.
So maybe they're transported there and then they're humanized right away in the Marantia and then get an adjuster. I mean, it's a little bit vague. You can't totally sort out the details. But so you got all those different options about whether or not they're humanized in the Marantia or humanized in the material in all these different scenarios. So are they literally going to go boom when they fuse or not? You know, and whatnot. Okay. All right. Then they've got just a little bit more to tell us here.
Throughout all of these epics, the imported assisting material sons and daughters exert a tremendous influence on the progressing social and economic orders. They are potentially immortal, at least until such time as they elect to humanize, receiving adjusters, and start for paradise.
So again, so you've got to humanize to receive an adjuster, like I've been stressing. It's got to be this upward-oriented thing. The adjuster is lining up with that upwardness. Okay, adjuster doesn't line up with a stationary, you know, sort of a being. Lines up with an up arrow. Right, they're potentially immortal, right? I mean, they can go on and on and on forever, you know, utilizing the tree of life and tapping into that energy. But the moment they humanize, okay, they're unplugged from all that. That's why they're saying, you know, at least until such time as they elect to humanize. I mean, as soon as they humanize, then they're unplugged from that, you know, that energy input from the master physical controllers. You know,
clock's running.
The tree of life doesn't do anything for them or anything now.
Parking meter.
Right? And so now you're going to have to, you know, get an adjuster, get a soul, right? So that's what they're, you know, reminding you of there, this that little technical detail. And then,
if they transport?
Yeah. Go ahead. No, yeah, go ahead.
If they transport by adjuster, they're not limited to that three times.
Right. I mean, you know, the adjuster, yes, instantaneous. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought logistically that might help clarify. why get a bunch of transport seraphim involved in that if they could just...
Well, but once you fuse with your adjuster, you start to get transferred.
Right, but not, I mean, if I fuse with, if I reach for a circular here and go all the way to fusion, okay, my soul fuses my adjuster, and the adjuster, that soul glued to it, goes immediately to the first mansion world, not via transport seraphim. It's only when they put a boat anchor body on me again, right, that I need a transport seraphim. Right? But when it's just that very rarefied Marantia thing that's a soul, not a more grounded Marantia body, right? The adjuster is not drugged down by that, and so it can still do its...
It only happens in these instances, because when you fuse on, let's say, mansion world number 5, you don't necessarily...
Right, when you have a Marantia body and you fuse,
right,
I mean... Yeah, it's not an explosive event, right? Right, you've got a Marantia body,
You still have a body.
And you still have a body after you fuse the same body, yeah.
Don't have a body.
All right, okay, last little thing here.
On the evolutionary worlds, a being must humanize to receive a thought adjuster. All ascendant members of the mortal core of finaliters have been adjuster indwelt and fused except seraphim, and they are father indwelt by another type of spirit at the time of being mustered into the core, into this core.
Just remember that's that one, that another type of father fragment is given to them at the time they're mustered into the core, and they fuse with that type of father fragment. But all the others have an adjuster like us. All right. So you notice that they kind of ended with just a little bit of physics there, this whole bit of humanizing, and you think thinking about all the technical details.
Right.
And again, it's like that, you know, the details don't improve your life directly, but just notice how that is trying to help you to eliminate all sorts of magical notions that you have in your head about your life and your future life. And right, they're trying to get you grounded and thinking logically about everything. And, Adam and Eve teach about economics, not about airy-fairy things, right?
Harp etiquette.
Harp etiquette, yes.
It's the life carriers that teach you about economics. Say that?
It's the life carriers are fostering right. That economic teachability. Okay. All right. So next time we'll get into a little bit more on this material
it's
development.
Paper,
but what was that?
It's a long
paper. It's a very long paper. We have all of the big picture stages to go through yet. So that I hope that gives you a little bit more meat, to notice how you can go to the cosmic mother levels, think about those levels of coordination and how you're moving up this, and to make these a little less abstract, to have something that you can kind of get your mind wrapped around of what you're really doing as you're going up these mysterious stages of light and life. That fundamentally your mind is being expanded into ever greater spheres of wholeness. That now that vast domain of wholeness can actually be focalized down into your mind. You have the capacity to fit such vastness of perspective, within your mind. Mm-hmm. Obviously not in all of its countless details, right? But the essence of that scope of wholeness now will fit into your mind.
Well, to me, comprehending papers like this that are very abstract and where we are now, it gives you the perspective to put life and daily stuff into the proper perspective. That it's not these overwhelming things.
It should be a lot easier to keep molehills, and not turn molehills into mountains. And you've got this bigger sense of yourself and the universe as you live in. You won't be this endless soap opera where every little thing is a giant catastrophe. And right, you can have peace that passes all understanding.
True.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there, and we'll continue on next time. Here, let's take a moment, everyone.